the hour of 4 o'clock having arrived, I call the State and Local Government and Elections Conference Committee meeting to order for May 1st, 2023. We do have a quorum present. With that, we're going to do today just a little bit of what we're going to do. We're going to do a walkthrough of the side-by-side documents that we have. Not all of the side-by-sides are currently ready, but I'd like to begin. Senator Murphy. I'd like to begin with just quick introductions of everyone at the table so everyone knows who is here and who's participating. So I think what I'd like to do is start at this end of the table, and if you just say your name and the position that you have here in the legislative body.
Stephanie James, Senate Counsel.
Joan White, Senate Counsel. I work on local government issues.
Andrew Erickson, a fiscal analyst covering state government.
Lexi Stengel, Senate Counsel for Elections.
Senator Bonnie Westland, I represent Plymouth, Maple Grove, and Madison Lake.
Senator Nicole Mitchell, I'm a member of the Elections Committee and Vice Chair for the State and Local Government and Veterans Committee.
Liz Bolden, a member of the Elections Committee. I represent District 25, which is Rochester and areas north.
Jim Carlson, District 52, Burnsville, Egan, Mendota Heights, and I'm the chair of the Senate Elections Committee.
Good afternoon. I'm Erin Murphy. I serve in the Minnesota Senate representing District 64, which is the westernmost part of St. Paul.
We have a couple of more people on this side of the table. If you will just introduce yourself. And
Haley Bloom Peterson, state and local government researcher for the DFL.
Will Freeman, elections researcher for Senate DFL.
Alexis Kesey, state and local gov and veterans LA.
And Beth Fraser, elections committee administrator for the Senate.
And then if you want to start at this end, and then we'll come back to her.
Lori Cousineau, GOP researcher for elections.
Jim Nash, state representative, and this brings being in the minority to a whole new level, as I am the only Republican on the conference committee. But I stand, Senator, I am the lead on state government finance in the House.
Representative John Hewitt, Representative Nash, all are welcome. And I represent Rosemont, Apple Valley, Egan, and I am the vice chair of state government finance in the House.
Representative Emma Greenman, I represent South Minneapolis 63B, and I'm the vice chair of the House Elections Committee.
Mike Freiberg, state representative for all or parts of Crystal, Golden Valley, Plymouth, and Robbinsdale, chairing the Elections Committee.
Amanda Rudolph, I'm the committee administrator for Chair Cleburne.
Ms. Freiberg.
Helen Roberts from the House Fiscal Staff.
Chelsea Griffin from House Research.
And I'm Shanique Cleburne, state representative from Plymouth and Medicine Lake, and serving on this committee with my center. So welcome to everyone. What we'd like to do then is to do a walkthrough of the side-by-side, and we will start with the state government appropriations. So if both Andrew Erickson and Helen Roberts would please go to the testifying table, that would be wonderful, and we'll begin there.
Which one is that?
State government appropriations will be found on R3A1. Is that right? Sorry. Article 1, A1. I said it backwards. Sorry. We start with R1, A1 in your packet.
Madam Chair,
would you rather start with the spreadsheet?
Yes.
Okay. We'll go to the spreadsheet, then that'll be easier. Right.
No, but it's right here. Madam Chair and members, again, we're starting with the spreadsheet that's labeled State and Local Government Policy and Finance Change Items. And you'll see that we have the House columns first, the Senate columns, and then a difference column, and then the tails, the House is colored or shaded. Well, I don't know if you have colored version, so that doesn't help. Okay, so I will start, and I guess we'll try to switch back and forth where it makes sense. I'll start with the legislature. On line 10, we have the operating adjustment for the Senate, and the House and Senate are identical on this item with $9.8 million in the 24-25 biennium, and then $12.6 million in the tails. And again, these are the change from base numbers. For the House operating budget, again, identical positions, $15.7 million in 24-25. And $16.25 billion in the tails for the House. For the LCC operating adjustment and technology requests, and this includes the revisor's request, it's $47.2 million. Again, the House and Senate are identical both in the fiscal year 24-25 biennium and then with $15.7 million in the tails.
The Senate position has $400,000 ongoing in each biennium for the Office on Economic Status of Women. There is also a $500,000 one-time appropriation for the, in the Senate position only for Senate File 83, Senator McEwen's bill on legislative employees' collective bargaining. There is a small difference on line 15. The House and the Senate both have a legislative task force on aging. The House position has $252,000. The Senate has $232,000.
On line 16, you'll see a House-only provision of $1 million in one-time funding for the Legislative Coordinating Commission Translation Services. And then below that, another House position, $165,000 one-time for the IIJA Advisory Task Force. And so just the total for the legislature, the House position is a change of $74.1 million. The Senate position is a change of $73.8 million in fiscal year 24-25.
The House and the Senate have identical positions for the governor's office. These include $10.9 million in the first biennium and $11.2 million in the second biennium for the governor's operating adjustment. This includes both a few new FTEs as well as shifting the structure of the governor's office from being funded primarily through transfers from other agencies into the special revenue account and directly out of the general fund. You'll see the offset to the portion of the offset on line 24 out of the special revenue fund reduction there. And then on line 22, the House and the Senate both have a $290,000 appropriation one time to look into an Office of Tribal Relations. The total spend out of for the governor's office in the bill is $11.2 million for both bodies.
I can move on to the state auditor. For the first item, the operating adjustment on line 27, the positions are identical, $1.5 million in 24-25 and then $1.9 million in the tails. The House and Senate also have identical positions for administrative support funding of $804,000 in fiscal year 24-25 and $818,000 in the tails. And then on technology staffing, there is a difference between the House and Senate in fiscal year 24-25. The House has just over $1 million and the Senate has $511,000. They're identical in the tails at $520,000. On line 30, the township specialist, both the House and Senate provide funding at the identical level of $229,000 in fiscal year 24-25 and $232,000 in the tails. And then on the next line, you'll see the legal and special investigation staffing. Again, identical, $734,000 in 24-25 and $746,000 in the tails. Another identical position is on line 32, the CTAS Township Assistance and Grants. Both the House and Senate fund this at $500,000 in one-time funds. And then the next item, there is a small difference for the regulatory compliance and oversight dashboard. $500,000 is the House position, and the Senate funds this at $600,000. These are both one-time funding. For the electronic auditing tools on line 34, the House funds this at $560,000, the Senate at $140,000 in fiscal year 24-25, and then we have identical positions in the 26-27 tails.
Lines 35 and 37 come as a pair. The Senate position is to shift a small statutory appropriation base for the state auditor out of one section of the tax statutes and to move it into the direct appropriation base. That leaves the House position at $5.9 million for 24-25 and the Senate at 5.0. For the Attorney General, the House and the Senate have identical positions for the operating adjustment of $25.4 million in the first biennium and also in the tails. There's also a one-time operating adjustment on line 42 that is one-time of $10 million, and that is identical as well, one-time funding in fiscal 24. Line 42. You had a one.
Oh, I'm sorry. I'm using a larger size printout, so I'm on a different page than everybody else. On line 41, there's a House position for the Attorney General of $2.5 million, a one-time and enhanced antitrust and nonprofit oversight.
So moving to the Secretary of State on page 2, there are identical House and Senate positions for the first five items, so I'll go over those relatively quickly. There's an operating adjustment for the Safe at Home program, which includes a small expansion of that program, expanding the Businesses Services Division along with Translation Services and Materials, enhancing office physical security, and also a Diversity, Equity, Accessibility, and Inclusion Coordinator. Respectively, those amounts are $764,000 in each biennium, $760,000, $236,000 in the current with $216,000 in the tails, that's the Business Services Division, $400,000 each biennium for physical security, and $176,000 for the Diversity, Equity, Accessibility, Inclusion Coordinator. The Senate also has two Senate-only positions. These are one-time money, $800,000 for a content management system upgrade and $200,000 to move the data center servers that the Secretary of State has at the Empire's Drive location. That leaves the Senate position at $3.3 million for the 24-25 biennium and the House with $2.3 million for the same biennium.
I can move on to the Capital Area Architectural and Planning Board. For the first three items, the overall funding level is the same. It's just split a little differently between the fiscal years. The House and Senate are the same on the maintain current service levels at $165,000 in 24-25 and $180,000 in the tails. Identical position on zoning and design rulemaking of $185,000 in one-time funding. And then again, identical on the $500,000 in one-time funding for commemorative works for the Capitol grounds. And then both the House and Senate fund the $1 million for the update to the Capitol Mall design framework plan. The only difference is that the House has this in fiscal year 23 and the Senate has it in 24. And so when you see that $1,000 difference in the column, that's really kind of an error because we're comparing the 24-25 totals.
Madam Chair, if I could. Sure. I just wanted to point out that on line 65, it says the total campaign finance and public disclosure board. And on line 60, it says capital area architectural and planning board. Just want to make sure that members see that and it can be corrected in future spreadsheets.
Thank you, Lee Nash.
So the total for the cap board for the House is $1 million in 23 and then $850,000 in 24-25. And then the Senate has $1.85 million in 24-25, and they're identical in the tails of $180,000.
For the Office of Administrative Hearings, the Senate has a $61,000 maintained current service levels in the first year with a $70,000 tail. The House position is $35,000 in each of the first years for a $70,000 total. That's a $9,000 difference between the positions, as well as $200,000 in the tail, which is a $130,000 difference. There's also a difference for the public comment portal on line 70. That is $1.8 million from the House one time, and the Senate has $2,075,000 one time.
And then there's a House-only position on line 69, $500,000 in one-time funding for the supplemental case load management. And so that brings the admin hearings general fund total for the House is $2.37 million, and for the Senate, $2.1 million in 24-25, and then the House has tails of $200,000, and the Senate has tails of $70,000. And then moving on to the Office of Administrative Hearings also receives funding from the Workers' Compensation Fund. So there are changes here. They're identical on all of them. The first is the maintain current service levels at $3 million in the 24-25 and then $3.1 million in the tails. There is also an operational increase for improving court services of $614,000 in 24-25 and $632,000 in the tails. And then finally, an identical position of funding for improved courtroom security, and that's $274,000 in 24-25 and $234,000 in the 26-27,000 tails. So again, the House and Senate are identical on the workers' compensation funding at $3.9 million in 24-25 and $3.97 million in the tails.
Moving to Minnesota IT Services, there are several identical House and Senate positions, beginning with a $1.4 million 24-25 appropriation to maintain current service levels, which is $1.9 million in the tails. Both bills have a $32.9 million one-time appropriation for cybersecurity advancements, a $33.6 million appropriation one-time for enterprise cloud transformation. There is a difference in the targeted application modernization change item. The House carries this as $45 million with $5 million additional in fiscal 24 compared to the Senate position of $20 million in each year for a $40 million total. For Children's Cabinet IT Innovation, similarly, the House's appropriation is somewhat more front-loaded compared to the Senate position. The House has $3 million the first year, $1 million the second year. The Senate carries that as a flat $2 million each year. In both cases, that's a one-time appropriation. On line 84, for accessible technology, the House has a $1.2 million one-time appropriation. The Senate has $600,000 in the budget biennium as well as in the tails biennium. There is money in both, $734,000 in both bills for MnGeo expansion that carries an $809,000 tail in both bills. For the public land survey monuments program, which was carried in the House by Representative Freiberg as House File 1231 and in the Senate by Senator Carlson as Senate File 1659, the bills carry identical amounts of $17 million in the first year and $5 million in the second year as a one-time appropriation. The Senate also funds a governor's change item for Executive Branch Digital Media Services. This is a $2.5 million appropriation in the budget biennium, $900,000 in the tail, which brings the House position for Minute Services to $140.8 million, with the Senate position at $137.7 million.
Okay, moving on to Department of Administration. The first item is an identical item of the maintaining current service levels. You'll see that throughout the spreadsheet that the House and Senate are identical on all of the maintained current service levels items. So it's $3.3 million in 24-25 and $3.8 in the tails. Second item is also an identical position. It's a $700,000 state match for the Procurement Technical Assistance Center, or PTAC. Both the House and Senate have $20 million in one-time funding for the space consolidation, relocation, and rent loss. And then on line 96, another identical position for the in-lieu of rent operating adjustment of $1.2 million, both in fiscal year 24-25 and then in the tails. The House and Senate, again, another identical position on 97 for archaeological and cemetery site inventory portal $478,000 in 24-25, and then $398,000 in the tails. There's a identical position for the Office of the State Archaeologist increase. That's $400,000 in 24-25, and that carries forward into the tails. And on line 99, both the House and Senate have $12.5 million in one-time funding for the risk management fund property self-insurance. On line 100, the House and Senate have identical positions for the SMART increase, also known as the small agency resource team. That's $650,000 in 24-25, and the same amount in the tails. And then both the House and Senate have $985,000 in 24-25 and $320,000 in the tails for the SHPO electronic project systems and database integration.
The Senate has a increase to the Office of Enterprise Sustainability of $1.9 million in the budget biennium as well as in the tails. The House does not have any money in the bill for this purpose. There is $2 million in the Senate bill for the Office of Grants Management to increase oversight. The House has an additional $2 million in the first year for a $4 million biennial total. The House doesn't have a tail on this appropriation. The Senate does have a $2 million tail. The House and Senate have identical positions on the Office of Grants Management for equity purposes. This is an $894,000 appropriation in the budget biennium, $794,000 in the tails. Both bills include the statewide grants management system feasibility study. This is carried as $936,000 in the budget biennium one time. There's also an identical position for the Office of Enterprise Translations of $2.5 million in the current biennium, $2.3 million in the tails. Another identical provision, the economic disparity studies in state procurement of $1.5 million one time. The Senate has a $1 million, $1.3 million tail for IT project and program management at the Department of Administration. Both bills have a $102,000 one-time appropriation for a small agency study.
Moving on to the public broadcasting items. The first one is the public TV block grants. You'll see that the House has $3 million in 24-25, while the House has $1 million. And then the House also carries a tail of $1 million. This moving on to the second item is the NPR funding for the Amber Alert system. And this is a House-only position of just over $1 million in both 24-25 and in 26-27. The House and Senate both have funding increases for AMPERS, but at different levels. The House has $4.1 million in 24-25, and the Senate has $3 million. And then the House has $750,000 in the tails. Both the House and Senate have funding that is very close on the AMPERS one-time funds to launch a statewide community news service. And the House has $1.25 million. The Senate has $1.3 million. And that is one-time funding. On the parking support, parking fund support on line 115, the House position is $4.3 million in 24-25 and no money in the tails, while the Senate has $2.2 million in 24-25 and the same amount in the tails. Moving down to line 116, the State Demographic Center researchers, the House funding is $650,000 in 24-25, while the Senate has this at $520,000. And then they have identical positions in the tails of $520,000. On line 117, this is a House-only provision of $3 million in one-time funding for the Enterprise Grant Management Oversight Systems, excuse me. On line 118, another House-only provision of $5 million to update the Capitol Mall Design Framework Plan.
Beginning on line 119 are three member bills from the Senate that the House did not carry. The first is Senator Murphy's Senate File 2156, the Buy Clean, Buy Fair Minnesota Act. This is the Department of Administration's part of that bill amounting to $889,000 in the first biennium, $734,000 in the tail. There are also some costs related to new councils created in the Senate bill where admin has to provide some training and update some training modules. The costs for supporting that would be $186,000 for the Council on LGBTQIA Minnesotans and $79,000 for the Youth Advisory Council. There's also a small special revenue expenditure for the archaeological and cemetery site inventory portal. There are fees that offset this spend later in the spreadsheet. So the general fund hit for each of these bills are for the House, $72.5 million in the current biennium, $65.2 million for the Senate position.
And I can move on to Minnesota management and budget. The first line item you'll see on line 127 is the maintain current service levels. And as with I mentioned before, these are all going to be identical. For MMB, it's $5.5 million in 24-25 and just over $7 million in the tails. Moving on, within MMB, the next item is on line 128, the enterprise resources planning or ERP systems funding. And the House has this funding at about $22 million, just under $22 million in 24-25, and the Senate has 27.979 in 24-25. And then there's a difference also in the tails where the House has a 16.96 million and the Senate has 12.9 million. Both the House and Senate provide funding for increased staffing, but at different levels. The House is at 3.4 million for 24-25 and the Senate is at 4.4 million. So that's a difference of $1 million. But they have an identical, position in the tails of just over $5 million.
There's a Senate-only provision for enterprise continuity planning. The Senate carried this at just under $2 million with a $1.5 million tail. There's no corresponding House provision. The two bills do carry identical amounts for the statewide internal audit office of $1.1 million in the budget biennium and $1.2 million in the tails. The established enterprise accountability and performance team change item is carried at $5.4 million in the House position, $4.7 million in the Senate position, and the House has a corresponding amount in the tails. The Senate's increases in the tails to $6.7 million. The two bills are identical for the Children's Cabinet, actually for the next five changes. There are identical House and Senate positions. $2 million in the current biennium for the Children's Cabinet and $2 million in the tails. $162,000 for the Employees with Disabilities Hiring and Retention Bill that was carried as House File 383 in the House and Senate File 1261 in the Senate. That's $162,000 in the current biennium, or in the budget biennium, $120,000 in the tails. And both bills also had $634,000 in the current biennium for the capital budget outreach, and it's the same number in the tails. Neither bill covered the Office of Addiction and Recovery. That was actually realigned into a different budget area in the legislature. And then the amount for the collaboration for data disaggregation is $5 million one time in both bills. That leaves the House MMB spend at $45.1 million, the Senate at $53.5
million. I can move on to Minnesota management and budget non-operating. So the first item is a contingent account increase. The House is at $3 million in 24-25 and the Senate at $2.5 million. And then the House also has an increase in the tails, carried in the tails of $2.5 million in the Senate. Does not have a tail on that increase. On line 143, this corresponds with just a line that was previously discussed under the governor's office. This is the governor's office operating increase, so there's an adjustment to agency budgets of a negative $8.67 million in both the House and Senate positions, and there's language in the bill instructing the commissioner of MMB to distribute those reductions among the agencies that currently pay for governor's office staff. And then finally, on line 144, this is a change that both the House and Senate are carrying for fiscal year 23, it's a $58.3 million cancellation from the COVID-19 management account. So you'll see for both the House and Senate that, again, the change in fiscal year 23 is $58.3 million. For 24-25, the House change is $5.7 million in 24-25, and then the Senate is $6.2 million. The House change in 26-27 is $6.2 million, and the Senate change is $8.7 million.
For the Department of Revenue, the only change item is to maintain current service levels. The House and Senate have identical positions in the budget biennium of $41.6 million. There's a difference in the tails where the House is carries a $51.8 million cost and the Senate a $46.8 million cost. For the Gambling Control Board, there is a small difference. This is out of a special revenue account. The House is carrying $2.4 million out of that account in the budget biennium, while the Senate is carrying $2.7 million out of that account, and the tail out of that account is identical at $2.8 million for the biennium, the tails biennium. For the Racing Commission, the maintain current service level change out of that special revenue account, which is a different account than the Gambling Control Board, is identical, $61,000 in the budget biennium, $82,000 in the tails. There's also an identical position in both bills to fund the Horse Racing Integrity and Safety Act implementation, a $1 million one-time general fund appropriation.
Moving on to the Minnesota Amateur Sports Commission, the first two positions are identical. The first is the maintain current service levels of $36,000 in the budget biennium and $48,000 in the tails. And then both the House and Senate have the $100,000 for adding a fiscal coordinator to the staff. And then there is a House-only position of $850,000 in one-time money. That's for the National Sports Center Ice Arena roof upgrade. And so the total for the Amateur Sports Commission for the House in 24-25 is $986,000. And for the Senate, $136,000, and they are identical in the tails at $148,000. I can start moving on through the ethnic councils. The first is the Minnesotans of African Heritage Council, and again, identical positions on the maintain current service levels, $90,000 in 24-25 and $104,000 in the tails. There is also additional staffing line item that is identical, $417,000 in 24-25, and then $424,000 in the tails.
For the Latino Affairs Council, the maintain current service levels change is also identical, $46,000 in the first biennium, $62,000 in the second biennium, as well as the addition of a communication specialist at $210,000 in each biennium. For the Asian Pacific Council, there is a identical maintain current service levels change of $200,000 in the first biennium, $222,000 in the tails. The Senate only has a provision for additional staffing with an extra $250,000 in the bill for that. I can just keep going. The Indian Affairs Council are all identical positions. The maintain current service levels at $129,000 in the first biennium, $152,000 in the tails. A legislative and policy director for $240,000 in each biennium and $600,000 in each biennium to implement the provisions of the Private Cemeteries Act update contained in each bill.
Moving on to the Minnesota Historical Society, the House and Senate are identical on the maintain current service levels, just over $4 million in 24-25 and $5.1 million in the tails. On the earned revenue recovery, both the House and Senate fund this, but at different levels. One-time funding from the House of $1 million in 24-25, and the Senate has one-time funding of $750,000. On line 190, we have the commission to redesign the state emblems, and there is a $10,000 difference here between the House and Senate. The House has $45,000. The Senate has $35,000, and I'm going to admit that I think that is House fiscal staff error, that I put in $10,000 for the that belonged to the LCC.
There are also two Senate-only positions in the Minnesota Historical Society area. One is a one-time increase to the current grant for which the Minnesota Historical Society is the fiscal agent. This is to Farm America of $100,000 each year, carried in the Senate as Senate File 2906 by Senator Dames. There's also a one-time appropriation of just under $19 million for historic sites asset preservation. With that, the House position for the Historical Society totals $5.1 million in the current biennium, and the Senate is $24 million.
Moving on to the State Arts Board, you'll see that the House and Senate have identical positions. They both fund the maintain current service levels at the same amount, and then have $400,000 increase for increasing grants oversight capacity. So the total for the Arts Board for both House and Senate is $439,000 in 24-25 and $452,000 in the tails. Moving on to the Humanities Commission, again, identical on line 201 for the maintain current service levels of $190,000 both in 24-25 and in the tails. On healthy eating here at home, they're both the House and Senate fund this, but at different levels. The House has $350,000 in 24-25. The Senate has $700,000. And then the House has a $612,000 increase in period in the tails, and the Senate does not have a tail on that item. And then there is, on line 203, a House-only provision of $5 million in one-time funding for civility and cultural awareness programs and grants. So the total for the Humanities Center for the House is $5.5 million. And for the Senate is $890,000.
The Accountancy Board has identical positions in both bills, $61,000 in the budget biennium to maintain current service levels with an $82,000 tail, and $240,000 in each biennium for additional staffing. The same at the Architectural and Engineering Board, maintain current service level change of $58,000 in the budget biennium, $78,000 in the tails. And again, with the Barber Examiners Board maintaining current service levels at $188,000 in the first biennium, $198,000 in the tails. There is one difference at the Cosmetology Examiners Board. It is not with the maintained current service levels, which is $1.1 million in the first biennium, $1.4 million in the tails, but with the Senate position carrying Senate File 1259, Senator Mann's bill on hair technician licensing, which required a one-time programming cost of $91,000. The Senate bill creates two new councils, the Council on LGBTQIA Minnesotans, which is in the Senate bill at just under $1 million in the first biennium and also in the second biennium, and then the Youth Advisory Council of just over $1 million in the first biennium and $1 million in the tails. There's also a $50,000 appropriation to the Bureau of Mediation Services related to the Legislative Employees Collective Bargaining provision carried to Senate File 83 by Senator McEwen.
And the last three items are all House-only items, and they are all one-time. The first is on line 260. You'll see there's $1.6 million to the Campaign Finance Board for cybersecurity, Mingio coding, and cloud integration. On line 264, there's $1 million in one-time funding for the Cutwall study, and this funding goes to the Minnesota Board of Regents. And then finally, on line 268, one-time funding to the Science Museum of Minnesota of $750,000 for revenue recovery.
As you move into page 7, you'll find the revenues and transfers. There are identical positions for the Senate and House bills on the state auditor billing revenue. This offsets this is revenue raised because of the increased staffing for the state auditor, who is required to recoup some of the costs of performing those audits, and that is deposited in the general fund as a non-dedicated receipt. That's $866,000 in the budget biennium and a $1.2 million revenue in the tails. Both bills also have a waiver of the parking fund debt service item, which is a cost to the general fund of $2 million in the budget biennium and also $2 million in the tails.
And then the House only has a one-time transfer of just over $7 million to the asset preservation account at the Department of Administration.
And then the Senate has a small revenue associated with the hair technician licensing provision mentioned above. That's $39,000 each year, so it only picks up the second year for the budget biennium, but in both years of the tails for a $78,000 revenue. There are also a couple of non-general fund revenues. This is the offsetting amount up to the governor's office for the operating adjustment shift to a direct appropriation from a transfer model that we've discussed at a couple points on the spreadsheet, as well as the piece that I referenced earlier for the fees for the archaeological and cemetery site inventory portal that are collected and deposited in the special revenue fund. Finally, on line 309, you will see that the bills are also carrying the cost of the already enacted Chapter 23, which is the Office of Administrative Hearings deficiency funding. And so with that, you'll see on the bottom, on line 313, that the bills both spend $1.6 million just south of that in the budget biennium and $1.3 million in the tails, and those are on target and identical across the House and Senate positions.
Much. I appreciate it, both analyst Roberts and Eric. That's very helpful. Next, we will move on to the state government change item comparisons. And I believe that would be Mr. Gehring. No, are we still? We did appropriations, and now we're moving on to. So go ahead. Is there more that?
Can you refer to which article you would like to walk through?
It would be my understanding that we would be walking through Article A2. Oh, I'm sorry. We're still in appropriations. So is this what you're referring to, Article 1? So R1A1. So we've done the spreadsheet. Do we want to talk about any of the language associated with this?
Madam Chair, I don't think that there is many substantive differences in the side-by-side. They're basically all riders that are connected to the spreadsheet.
Okay. Thank you very much. We do have Article 2-2. Which is in the House language, starting with the information technology and cybersecurity. If you look on the bottom of your sheet. Oh, I did this wrong. Excuse me, Mr. Gehring. I see that the information technology is on item 4. So item 2. I guess we'll move on to local government. So may I ask your indulgence? Thank you. We'll move on to local government. Start with, at the bottom of your page, you will see R1A3-2. That's correct.
Mm-hmm. Madam Chair and members of the Conference Committee, for the record, my name is Chelsea Griffin, and I'm a legislative analyst with House Research. I'll be walking you through the local government policy provisions, the first half of them, and then Ms. White will conclude. I'll also bring your attention to the summary document that's labeled Comparison 2023 Omnibus Local Government Policy Articles. So starting on page R1, section 1 of the House, this is a House-only provision that removes the state of emergency limitation on participation by a member of certain public bodies in an open meeting from a non-public location for personal or family medical reasons. Pages R1 to R3, which correspond to House Sections 2 through 5 and Senate Sections 1 through 4, these provisions are the same, they're identical, and they expand the eligibility for certain long-term equity investments to local governments with a recent general obligation rating of AA or higher. There's also a new section that regarding investment authority for certain self-insurance pools. On page R3 to R4, which is House Sections 6 and 7 and Senate Sections 5 and 6, this language is also identical. It authorizes Ramsey County and Anoka County to establish library advisory boards, which would replace the existing library boards in those counties. Page R4 to R8, this corresponds to House Sections 8 through 9, and also I'll bring your attention to on page R16, the repealer in House Section 17, House-only language, and it creates provisions in the Hennepin County chapter of the Minnesota statutes that relate to contract negotiations and the soliciting, selection, and negotiation of a contract manager at risk for certain projects. Native landscapes, so this starts on page R8 and goes through page R9. It corresponds to House Section 10. It's House-only language, and it would require cities to allow managed natural landscapes on private property. Page R9 to R11, this is Senate-only language, which corresponds to Senate Sections 7 through 12, and these sections expand the authority to create, expand, or enlarge a special service district to include a multi-unit residential property. And then on pages R11 to R12, corresponding to House Sections 11 through 12, House-only language, these sections create a new section of the Minnesota statutes that provides procedures for a municipality to award a contract to a construction manager at risk. And I'll turn it over to Ms. White.
Madam Chair, members, Joan White with Senate Council. I'll be continuing with the staff side by side and referencing the reviser side by side. House Section 13 and Senate Section 13 on R12 to R13 is the Municipal Hotel Licensing Section. Creates a new section of law authorizing a city or town to adopt an ordinance requiring hotels operating within the municipal boundaries to have a valid license issued by the city or town. The next section is on R13 and R16. It's the repeal of political subdivision compensation limit. These are the same, but there's a technical difference in the structure of the repealer, and staff recommends the Senate structure. This repeals the compensation limit for employees of political subdivisions of the state. The next is the Metropolitan Mosquito Control District. This is a House-only provision on R13, House Section 15. It removes the requirement that the director of the Metropolitan Mosquito Control District be an entomologist. The next is the city reporting of buildings without a sprinkler system. This is also a House-only provision, House Section 16. It requires the city of the first or second class to provide a list to the state fire marshal of certain residential buildings in the city that have not been retrofitted with a sprinkler system. We'd like to let you know that there is identical language in the House Housing Policy Bill, House File 2335, and nearly identical language in the Senate Housing Policy Companion Bill. The next is the Municipal Building Commission Dissolution. This is in both the House and Senate bill. It's on R14 to R16. It's Article 4 of the House and Section 15 of the Senate. And the House article in the Senate section authorizes the dissolution of the Municipal Building Commission and the City of Minneapolis, which currently serves as a steward for the historic Minneapolis City Hall and Hennepin County Courthouse Building. The House and Senate provisions are structured differently. The House is in an article with separate sections. The Senate language is one section with subdivisions. The repealers are identical, which are effective when the underlying section of law is effective. The difference in this language is there was a Senate amendment which was included to protect the employment of current MBC employees. The Senate adds new definitions and provides that all MBC employees will be employees of the city or the county upon full execution of the transactional documents, and employees retain their existing MBC employee rights, remedies, and privileges. And the last section is a Senate-only section on R16. And this section allows the City of St. Paul to solicit and award a design-build contract for skate parks, for a skate park in Eastside Heritage Park in St. Paul. This is currently not allowed under the municipal contracting law. And this would carve out an exception to that prohibition.
Thank you very much. Now, let's see, we have the state government information technology piece. And I don't know if, I apologize for the confusion going back and forth. Please introduce yourself and then begin.
Madam Chair, Matt Gehring from House Research.
And Stephanie James, Senate Counsel.
And committee members, I think that Ms. James and I will go back and forth, and we'll do this one fairly quickly because there's lots of similar or same sections between the House and the Senate in this article. I'm going to skip over the first several pages and just tell you at a high level that there's a variety of changes that are sort of small changes that affect the operations of Minute, particularly. There's new authority here for a minute to appoint deputy and assistant commissioners. There's a variety of sort of smaller general updates to the duties of Minute and the way that they operate. And those things are sort of difficult to sort of walk through individually unless members specifically have questions. So I think I'll skip ahead to page R5 of the side-by-side for this article, which is the first place where you see a difference between the House and the Senate.
And so, Mr. Gehring, we're on R5A2-2?
Madam Chair, correct.
Thank you.
So on R5A2-2, you'll see on the House side, House Sections 10 and 11, this is the first place in this article where there's a difference between the House and the Senate. This is language that was proposed by Representative Nash that requires some more reporting from Minute related to cloud computing projects. So Section 10 requires Minute to adopt metrics that would help assess the progress of cloud computing projects in state government. And then Section 11 is a section that requires Minute, beginning January 15th, 2024, to provide an annual report to the legislature on progress towards cloud computing projects within the agency. And then, Madam Chair, at the bottom of page R5 is House Section 39 and Senate Section 6. This is language that authorizes MMB to provide cash flow assistance to Minute for certain expenses. There's a substantive difference here in that the House language provides for does not provide a cap on the amount of cash flow assistance that can be provided, and the Senate language you see on page R6-A2, Senate line 77.18, provides a cap of $60 million for that assistance.
And then sections on that same page, R6-A2-2 on the House side, section 40 and 41, and on the Senate side, section 7 and 8, make changes to the uses that the Odyssey Fund can be used for. And then the last, second to last section in this article on the House side, section 42, and on the Senate side, section 9, is a new cybersecurity grant program for county and local governments. And then on the last section, the repealer, and the grant program is, all of those sections are identical, as is the last one, which is a repealer of a reporting requirement that's combined in an earlier section in this article.
And Madam Chair, that's the end of this article.
Thank you very much, both of you. I greatly appreciate your expertise. And then we will move on to the election and campaign finance portion. If we can begin with the elections appropriations, please. And again, would you like to begin with the spreadsheet?
Yes, thank you, Madam Chair. And I think if it's okay with you, again, there's not really any substantive differences in the side-by-side that aren't tied specifically to the spreadsheet. So I think we'll skip that part if it's okay with you and just do the spreadsheet.
That's fine. Thank you very much.
So beginning with the spreadsheet that is time-stamped April 28, 2023 at 12:27 p.m., I won't do too much orienting to the spreadsheet since Ms. Roberts did that on the earlier one. What you'll find on line 5 is a Senate-only provision of $489,000 one time for a ranked choice voting and voter engagement advisory task force, part of Senator Morrison's Senate File 2270. The next items under the Secretary of State's office were governor's change items that are carried identically with one exception. There's $1.1 million in each biennium for election administrative and voter information for both bills. The HAVA state match is identical for both bills, $461,000, but the Senate carries this in fiscal 23 and the House in fiscal year 24. There's also a one-time appropriation for redistricting litigation fees that was carried in the Senate, Senate File 1570 by Senator Coleman. There is a Senate-only provision for elections administration changes that were part of Senator Westland's Senate File 1191. This is a $39,000 one-time appropriation. There are identical amounts in the bill for related to early voting. That was House File 558, Representative Frederick, and Senate File 1434, Senator Westland, of $164,000 in the budget biennium and $54,000 in the tails.
And the next item on line 14 is a House-only provision. This is setting up a new account that provides funding to local governments for election costs. It's called the voter account. And the acronym will be outlined in the language. I'm sorry, I forgot exactly what it is. But you can see that there's a $2.6 million in 24-25 and then $2.7 million in the tails.
There are several more Senate-only change items for the Secretary of State. This includes $22,000 one time for the office's costs related to the ranked choice voting and voter engagement advisory task force described above, $200,000 one time for an education campaign for the restoration of voting rights, and $800,000 in one-time accessibility grants carried as Senate File 2144 by Senator Hoffman. You'll also see that there is an annual reduction of $48,000 to the base for the Secretary of State, and this is connected to line 31, so we'll actually just skip ahead right here. There's a report that is required in the bill. This was Senator Westland's Senate File 1191 again, and the cost of the report involved $165,000 in one-time costs and a $33,000 annual ongoing cost. This replaces an obligation that is currently being performed by the Secretary of State, for which they are transferring $48,000 to the DOC. And so in directly appropriating it to the Department of Corrections, we're able to turn off the flow of funds to the Secretary of State for that purpose. Moving back up then to the Campaign Finance and Public Disclosure Board, there are several identical provisions in the House and Senate bills, $338,000 in the current biennium, $378,000 in the tail to maintain current service levels, $100,000 for the governor's proposed change for the Minute Cloud, and $440,000 in each biennium for new audit staff. There are also changes to the public subsidy program in both bills. For the Senate, this is accomplished through a one-time transfer of $3.9 million into that account, and then a statutory change of the amount that will go beginning in fiscal year 26 of $3.9 million.
And the House also increases the public subsidy program. You can see just under $3 million in 24-25, and then $1.2 million in 26-27. We have it structured a little bit differently than the Senate, but they both lead to increased funding for that program. And then the final change on the Campaign Finance Board is an identical provision for lobbyist registration to include all political subdivisions, and that is funded at $262,000 in 24-25 and $210,000 in the tails. So the total for the campaign finance board for the House is $4.1 million in 24-25, and for the Senate it's $5 million. And then in the tails, the House funding is a $2.3 million increase, and the House is just over $5 million.
On line 38, you will see changes to revenues and transfers. In this case, it is a non-dedicated receipt to the general fund of $4,000 in each biennium relating to public list requests. The Secretary of State is expected to get under House File 3. On the second page, you'll also see that the bill, or that the jurisdiction is carrying two lines for other bills that have passed this session, Chapter 12, Felon Voting Rights, House File 28, Representative Frazier, and Senate File 26, Senator Champion. That was a $14,000 one-time appropriation in fiscal year 23. And then House File 3 carried two general fund costs to the Secretary of State and the Attorney General, totaling just almost $1.1 million in budget biennium, $822,000 in the tails, and then a non-general fund cost of $45,000 for the Department of Public Safety. You will see that on line 56 for the budget biennium, the total spend in the House was $24.6 million, or $24,616,000 in the House, the Senate with $24,602,000, a $14,000 difference. They are identical in the tails with an $11.9 million spend on line 54.
I would just like to ask, and maybe I missed it, on line 19, I don't know if we mentioned the accessibility grants.
Madam Chair, I glossed over it very quickly, but yes, the Senate is carrying $800,000 for accessibility grants to locals for improving public polling place accessibility.
Awesome. Okay, thank you so much. I understand there has just been a change in documents. We have some updated documents. If I could please ask my CLA to distribute those documents. These are most helpful, thank you. Just so you know, anybody who's listening at home, we've just been handed the 2023 Omnibus State Government side-by-side compare notes. It's just a summary of what's actually in the document. And I will ask you, do you prefer to begin with elections administration or elections campaign finance?
Madam Chair, I think we would probably start with elections administration, and then I'll defer to you on the best way to do the walkthrough. Ms. Bengel and I prepared the summary. We also worked the side-by-side. The side-by-side document is 85 pages, and I'm concerned that we would eat up the entire rest of your committee time if we did a section-by-section walkthrough. So I'm wondering if it would be okay with you if we just did a summary of the – we walk through the sort of summary document instead.
It is fine to go through the summary document. Thank you.
And we're happy to – if members have questions about specific sections or where to find things, we can certainly
– that would give us time for some public testimony. So thank you very much.
So, Madam Chair, Matt Gehring from House Research again.
Hi, Lexi Stengel from Senate Counsel.
So then the first summary document we'll work through is the election administration policy comparison document. And the way this table is oriented, it shows you the page numbers on the side-by-side. So if you're interested in looking at the specific statutory language, you can see the citations there for where to find everything. So the first item on this summary document that you see is the sections 1 and 2 on the House side. These are House-only provisions that provide district boundary adjustments for Senate District 12 as well as Senate District 9 and the corresponding House districts within those districts. Section 3 is also a House-only provision. This is language that permits workers of the United States Census to access multiple-unit residential buildings for official business, similar to the existing law that authorizes campaign workers access to these buildings for political purposes. And then House Section 4 is the Voting Operations Technology and Election Resources account. This is the voter account that Ms. Roberts just described a few minutes ago in the spreadsheet. This is structure for providing funds to local governments for election costs. And again, this is a House-only provision. Next in the summary document, you'll see a whole list of sections. There's a variety of updates and changes to various aspects of election administration law within this article that are either identical or very similar between the House and the Senate. We won't go through every single one, but you'll see the section numbers there. And again, we can answer questions if members have them about any individual piece, but they generally fit in this category of kind of miscellaneous is the best way to understand these sections. Next,
would it be normal to say many of these are technical changes?
Right, Madam Chair. Yeah, so I would describe them as technical administrative provisions that relate to the conduct of elections, and they're sort of in this miscellaneous category because they're all very small kind of wording and terminology changes.
Thank you very much.
Mm-hmm. Next on the summary document, you'll see sections between the House and Senate that are very similar. This is language that prohibits intimidation of or interference with the duties of an elections official. The House and Senate language on these sections is largely the same with some wording differences between the two. And then the last row you see on this first page of the summary document is identifying a number of sections within both bills that amend laws that facilitate voter registration by students in post-secondary institutions. On the House side, one substantive difference is that it includes school districts and certain reporting requirements related to voter registration, and the Senate focuses primarily on voter registration within post-secondary institutions. And then starting on page 2 of this summary document is a House-only provision, House Section 7, that amends the standard used by the Secretary of State and other elections officials to determine whether a political party has met the threshold for major political party status based on the number of votes that they received at the most recent state general election. And maybe I'll turn over to Ms. Stengel from here.
Thank you, Mr. Gehring. Madam Chair and members, the next line establishes early voting, in the state of Minnesota for the 18 days before an election. And it makes various changes to timelines and conforming changes, so you'll see that there's a whole pile of sections there. Next, there are several sections, which is another terminology change where it uses where current law uses the term reside or resided, it changes that to maintains or maintained residence. And one thing perhaps we should have noted at the beginning, in the column about Senate sections, there are essentially two Senate files within this document because the Senate had a Senate a policy-only bill, so that was pulled in here. So you'll see that there are some bills from the unofficial engrossment of 1830 as well as Senate file 1362, so you'll see multiple sections with the same numbers. So that's why you're seeing that, and we tried to call out the differences, different bills on this sheet. Back to the walkthrough. The next line, there are reports required by the Commissioner of Corrections and the State Court Administrator to the Secretary of State about who is incarcerated. With the passage of the bill earlier restoring the right to vote upon release of incarceration, this amends those reports accordingly, so they're reporting on the people who are incarcerated instead of incarcerated and serving probation sentences. And that is a Senate-only provision. The next has to do with amending procedures for filing a challenge to somebody's voter eligibility before the election day, and this is the same in both bills. The next line has to do with electronic signatures on e-poll books, and the two provisions are similar with some minor differences in wording. I'll turn it back over to Mr. Gehring.
And Madam Chair, next, on the summary document, you see a House-only section. This is House Section 27. This is language that was adopted during debate on the bill on the House floor that prohibits compensation for the collection of absentee ballot applications that's based on sort of an incentive to collect a certain number of applications. And then next is another set where there's a number of sections that are identified here that are very similar between the House and the Senate. There's a variety of changes to the way that absentee voting is conducted and processed. These include how absentee voting is administered, schedules and deadlines for delivery of absentee ballots to certain types of voters, the way that individuals can access the names of voters who have submitted an absentee ballot, procedures that would apply to deployed emergency response and utility workers, for purposes of absentee voting, and a variety of other terminology and other updates related to the materials that are used for absentee voting and other aspects of the absentee process. These sections are largely the same between the House and the Senate, but there are some stylistic and wording differences between those sections, so that's why you see it identified as similar here. And then House Section 31, the next row on this table, is a House-only section that requires county auditors to establish a polling place for at least one day on Indian reservation lands if the local tribe requests it. And then following that section, that row, you see House Section 54 and Senate Section 31 with specific lines that allow candidates to file affidavits of candidacy without an email address if the candidate does not have an email address. This is identical between the House and the Senate. And then another row related to candidate filings is similar between the House and the Senate, but not identical. This is new language that permits candidates who have a reasonable fear in regard to their safety or the safety of a member of the candidate's family to request that their address be classified as private data within the filing office. And then next is identical language between the House and the Senate that allows sort of transitions the existing student election judge program to be referred to as a trainee election judge program and would permit students who have graduated from high school up until the age of 18 to participate in that program. And then last on this page is a variety of sections that all sort of relate to the same topic. This is language that modifies the way notices of election are published in newspapers, and instead of publishing sample ballots, it specifies a particular type of notice that would be published and what must be included in that notice.
Madam Chair, members, at the top of page 4, there are some changes related to electronic voting systems. This authorizes multiple styles of ballots. Sometimes this is referred to as the skinny ballots. It amends the timeline for public accuracy testing and classifies the data that's created when there's a cast vote record created. And those are similar provisions. The next line has to do with mail balloting, and they're identical in both bills, and this removes a geographical restriction on mail balloting, so it would allow any town anywhere in the state or a city with fewer than 400 registered, fewer than 400 registered voters anywhere in the state to conduct elections by mail. On the next line, there's another identical provision that permits an employee to be absent from work for voting before election day.
And then next, Madam Chair, is a House-only section, House Section 76, which provides standards about how election night count results are disclosed when there are remaining absentee ballots to be counted. And then following that is Section 79 on the House side and Section 47 on the Senate side related to the State Canvassing Board. This is language that is similar between the two bodies that requires the State Canvassing Board to declare a candidate who receives the highest number of votes for a federal or state office as the duly elected candidate to that office. Next is language that where there are policy differences between the House and the Senate. This is language that modifies the way that candidates for partisan offices are rotated on the ballot. And then next is House-only language that amends standards related to the timing of conducting a special election when there's a vacant legislative seat that occurs during the period when the legislature will be in session. That's House Sections 87, 88, and 89. Those are House-only provisions. Sections 108, 109, and 110 on the House side, and 73, 74, and 75 on the Senate side follow. And this is the adoption of the National Popular Vote Interstate Compact. They're identical between the two bodies.
Madam Chair and members, the last line on page 4 has to do with primary election reports and requires local officials to file a primary election report in cities where there is no primary, which is essentially cities that are currently using ranked choice voting. So it would require candidates there to file this report at the same timeline. On page 5, the next line is soliciting near polling places, and the House and Senate have similar language with some differences, and this has to do with updating the prohibition on campaigning or soliciting near polling places on Election Day. And this is sometimes referred to as the polling place apparel provision, so it modifies what you can wear, display, and distribute on in or near a polling place. The next line is Senate only provision, and it establishes a Secretary of State voting task force to engage a variety of stakeholders to look at voter engagement, voter education, and ways to improve the voting system more generally. And finally, there is a repealer of a statute that is stylistically different but substantively the same, repeals the law on who may participate or vote at a political party caucus. And that concludes our walkthrough of the elections article.
Thank you very much. I appreciate that. So then we will move on to the campaign finance policy comparisons, please.
And Madam Chair, we'll do the same with this article as we did with election administration and just walk through the summary document, and we'll do it as quickly as possible so you can take some testimony before you're out of time. The first row in the summary document identifies sections where there are some policy differences between the House and the Senate related to economic interest disclosure. This is language that requires disclosure of a spouse's economic interest in addition to the public official. It also requires disclosure of certain types of contracts, professional licenses, leases, and franchises. There's on the Senate side, there's a policy difference here. The Senate adopted additional language that expands the definition of associated business and also defines the term interested person. And if members have questions about that, we can certainly take them. Those additions are Senate-only provisions. There's also a series of sections in this article that relate to lobbyist and principal reporting. There's a variety of changes there that come from the Campaign Finance Public Disclosure Board. There's amendments to reporting requirements and requires reporting on general categories and specific subjects of interest as identified by the board. Next also is a series of sections within the lobbying sections of the statute that expand the jurisdiction of the Campaign Finance Board to include registration of individuals who are lobbying before the political subdivisions rather than just focusing on those who are seeking to influence action at the state level or within a metropolitan governmental unit. And then next, on page R4 of the side-by-side, the non-campaign disbursement row that you see, there's similar language here, but also some policy differences I'll highlight. These are both Section 6 in the House and Senate side. The similar language between both bodies authorizes recount costs as well as costs to repair or replace damaged campaign property to be reported as a non-campaign disbursement through a campaign fund. On the House side, there's a substantive policy difference. The cost of running a transition office is included on the House side, and on the Senate side, there's modifications to existing language that permits the use of campaign funds for security monitoring costs.
I can take it from here, Madam Chair. The last line on this page has a variety of article or sections related to campaign finance that we categorized as miscellaneous. There is a more detailed list on the summary document, so I won't read through all of them. Unlike the elections bill, I wouldn't describe these as technical. Some of them are substantive, but because they do a variety of different things, we sort of classified them as miscellaneous. On page 2, there's a similar provision related to virtual currency and authorizes contributions made in virtual currency and provides a process for determining value and depositing those. The Senate includes a definition of what virtual currency is. On the next line, both the House and Senate have several provisions relating to electioneering communications and requires reporting on those communications, providing definitions and makes a variety of conforming changes. In the next line, there's several Senate-only provisions related to mobile payments. And essentially what this does is requiring contributions to be deposited automatically into one of the depositories of the candidate or committee or fund or party unit, and then requires spending to be out of that same depository or in petty cash. And the idea here is that you can temporarily hold a contribution in what we're calling a digital wallet, but that money has to be deposited in a depository. So you can't keep money in a digital wallet and then spend it out of the digital wallet. It all has to run through an official depository. And then finally, there are sections in both bills relating to contributions during the legislative session, prohibiting candidates from soliciting certain contributions during the session. And then there's an additional Senate-only provision relating to restricting political parties using the image of a legislator or promoting attendance of a candidate at an event to solicit contributions during a legislative session. And that concludes the walkthrough for campaign finance.
Thank you very much. It's a lot of valuable information that you've given us today, and thank you. I appreciate that. We will move on. Let's see. 5:21. What I'm going to ask is we have 5 people who have signed up to testify in advance. So I will name the first two so that we'll know who's on deck. And then I will just ask you to keep your testimony brief, keeping in mind that we just have a short period of time left. We will begin with Matt Ayling, followed by John Anthonson. So if we can begin with Matt Ayling. You'll identify yourself for the record and please begin your testimony.
Certainly. Thank you, Madam Chair. Matt Ayling, Minnesota Coalition on Government Information. I'm going to speak to a piece regarding OLA data that has been in and out various versions of the both finance and the policy omnibus, and just to provide the committee with an update on this matter. So there has been a lot of discussion since HF 1830 was introduced as an omnibus bill. Our organization testified about some concerns about public access to data that was being removed through some of the language in that bill. And we've been speaking with the legislative auditor over many sessions. We've come close to an agreement, then farther away, then close again. And we think we have something that is, while we don't agree on everything, we have some substantive agreement areas in regard to keeping some data public, particularly about the work of the legislative auditor when the legislative auditor does not issue a final report. The language in the bill would have made that information not public, and we have an agreement to make more of that information public in an amendment that the legislative auditor, I believe, is circulated to members of this committee. So. I just wanted to update the committee on that, and I'm happy to take any questions on that piece.
I would like to say thank you for your continued work on that matter, and I'm glad that you were able to find a compromise. I realize compromise isn't always perfect, but I do appreciate your continued work on that. And because we are short on time, when we bring the amendment forward, please feel free to come back. But
great.
We'll move on to our next testifier. And the next testifier will be John Anthonson, followed by Arlene Shayshad. John is not here. Okay. Arlene is making her way down. So the next testifier after Arlene will be Mei Yang. Welcome to the committee. If you'd please state your name for the record and begin your testimony.
Madam Chairs and members, I am not Arlene. She could not be here this evening. I am Peg Larson, and I lobby for the Metropolitan Mosquito Control District. And we do have the piece in Article 3, Section 15, I believe, asking to eliminate the word entomologist. There have been executive directors in the past who have not been entomologists, and it has been very successful. There is, at this point, no one who objects to this, as they are putting in their bylaws the need for 3 entomologists on staff, which they actually have right now. And they have put out a search nationwide 2 different times to find an entomologist who could have business background, and they cannot find anyone. So we are asking if you could strike that word and let us just hire an executive director who does all the budgeting and the purchasing and all of the other things they need to run the agency. I would stand for questions.
Thank you, Ms. Larson. I appreciate your being here. We'll just move on to our next testifier, if that would
sure.
be great with you.
Sure. And I'm around if you need me. Thank you.
Thank you so much. Mei Yang will be followed by Matt Hilgart. Welcome to the committee. It's good to see you again.
Yeah, good afternoon, Madam Chair and members of the committee. My name is May Yang, and I'm the Public Policy Manager with the Minnesota Council on Foundations. We are, MCF is a statewide association of grant makers, and we are focused on ensuring Minnesota has a strong charitable sector and an inclusive democracy where everyone can be seen, counted, and heard. As an organization that's committed to strengthening democracy and civic participation, I'm here today to express my support for the following. First, we ask that this committee adopt the House language permitting census workers access to multi-unit facilities. Data from the 2020 census revealed that renters were significantly undercounted compared to an overcount of homeowners. Renters make up 28% of all households in Minnesota. Thus, it's critical to allow enumerator access to ensure that we're reaching a significant portion of our population to ensure a full and accurate count. Secondly, we thank the House and Senate for including funding for the State Demographic Center. This is an important investment in providing better community and public access to data. Adding two full-time employees will help the office meet community demand and prepare the state for the 2030 census and ensure community members can access, interpret social, economic, and demographic data through trainings and resources. Third, MCF also encourages the committee to include the Senate's proposal to fund an education campaign on the restoration of voting rights. Lastly, as a community of grant makers, we support the efforts in both the House and Senate bills to fund grants administration oversight and equity. We ask this committee to go with the Senate's recommendation for increasing capacity for oversight at the Office of Grants Management. The Senate language maintains this investment beyond the fiscal year 24-25 biennium. We feel that this investment in the Office of Grants Management should be maintained into the future, given the significant level of grant making the state does and will likely continue to do. Thank you for including census priorities and efforts to promote an inclusive democracy. We also appreciate the proposed investments in grants administration. Thank you for your leadership and the opportunity to testify today.
Thank you very much. We appreciate your being with us today. Mr. Hilgard.
Thank you, Madam Chair, members. My name is Matt Hilgard. I work for the Association of Minnesota Counties. AMC represents all of Minnesota's 87 counties. Madam Chair, Chair Murphy, we are grateful for a slate of county and local government provisions included in both and or the House and Senate bills, but I want to focus my testimony today just to one particular House provision, and that is the elections, local elections administration funding that the House included in their proposal. It was heard in the Senate, but the House carried both funding and our preferred policy language in the House. There has been significant discussion this year on strengthening or preserving democracy, and I would respectfully posit that one of the fundamental bedrock tenets of how our elections administration system works in Minnesota is your election administrators at a local level. Secretary of State often testifies before these committees saying that it is not their office that runs elections, it is your local election administrators training judges, purchasing equipment, etc. Just to put a couple examples in your mind, the average tabulator is between $8,000 to $10,000. Stearns County has 99 of them. The central count machine is $70,000 to $125,000. For Lacqua-Parle County, that machine alone is 1% of their levy. IT and cybersecurity upgrades, which are becoming much more regular and of an occurrence at a local level, anywhere from $5,000 to $65,000 in Sherburne County. Equally important to the funding level, which we are hoping to increase as the conference committee process goes along, is the policy language that the House includes. And I want to give Chair Freiberg, Representative Greenman, and the original author, Representative Coulter, a lot of credit for this. This language was put together by the Association of Minnesota Counties, League of Minnesota Cities, and Minnesota Association of County Officers in coordination with the Secretary of State's office. This is language that works for your local election administrators. If you were to ask the testifiers that came before this committee, Lori Halverson from Dakota County, or Michelle Claussen, a commissioner from Washington County, this is their preferred language, and this would this is something that they tremendously support. So in conclusion, members, I just want to thank the House for carrying this, the Senate for hearing this. We are hopeful that at the end of the day, and with the significant elections policy package that is asking a lot from your local election administrators, this is something that comes out well-funded with the policy language that we are asking for. Thank you.
Thank you very much for your testimony. Those are all of the individuals who are scheduled to testify today. I will ask one more time if Mr. Anthonson is here. Okay, I do not see him. That concludes the business that we have scheduled for today. Our next meeting will be Tuesday, May 2nd, and the Senate will have the gavel at that time. With that, the meeting is adjourned.